I couldn't be a sport writer today. You have to be on TV every other day. Jobs are scarce, the newspapers are dying, and I'm glad I'm not looking for a job today.
Every one of us is a walking museum of sports, from that first ball game with your folks to maybe getting that first nervous, sweaty autograph, or maybe even taking your own kids to their first game. It's the feeling we all get that brings us all back to our own personal Philly Field of Dreams, and the Museum of Sports show is on the air and ready to go there with you. I'm Doug Scheimel. Our show dedicated to sports memories, memorabilia, and the museum that's going to capture it all right here in Philadelphia. We're live on the Talk 860 and Museum of Sports Facebook pages, so check us out. Museum of Sports show brought to you by the Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. Joining me from his sports cave in Villanova, he is our guide and mentor, Comcast Spectacor legend, founder of the Museum of Sports, and author of the new book just out, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created Philadelphia's Greatest Showplace. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Lou Scheinfeld.
Well, I hope that our show today can bring some fun and laughter to people. It's been pretty depressing. Lately, we don't deal in the news. There's enough people handling all that. And so we've got some good guests today and some good questions. So let's just have some fun with sports.
Exactly. And from her sports, I don't know which room that is. It's not the sports basement. It's not the sports porch.
It's the side office.
It's the office. The Museum of Sports Director of Community Outreach, Susan Baxter. Hi, Susan.
Hello. Maybe good news. We have Michelle Tafoya last week announced that she's departing her sideline reporting job for NBC on the Sunday Night Football team of Al Michaels and Collingsworth. And doing the political route, supporting the Minnesota gubernatorial candidate. So little leap for her that I never knew. So it'll be interesting who they bring up for the next sideline reporter. I always respected Michelle Tafoya.
Yeah, she's been there forever and certainly a staple of that coverage. And Al Michaels is going to be departing too. And so I guess that brings in Mike Tirico, Mike Tirico potentially with Collingsworth. Then who's the sideline reporter? Well, coming up today on our show, he was a longtime color guy in the booth with the Phillies for many years alongside Harry Callis. Chris Wheels Wheeler will be joining us from Clearwater, assuming he remembers. And coming up at 4:40, our own King of Sports Collectibles with the world's most valuable and largest sports memorabilia collection, Nick DiPaccio Jr. But up first, you see him there in the Zoom box. He has pretty much done everything there is to do in the sports writing world. He's written for the Boston Globe, the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, you name it. Currently a contributing writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer and God knows who else, a big Museum of Sports show. Welcome back after 2 years to sports writer John Marks. Hi, John.
How you doing, Doug and Lou and Susan?
Yeah, we were just underway. We were just underway, as you were pointing out before the show, we were just underway with the pandemic. It was May of 2020?
Yeah, and we didn't know what was going to happen. There were the ideas of an NBA going in the bubble then was what was happening, and the 60-game baseball season had yet to start. And we, it's hard to believe it's been 2 years. We may be getting back to somewhat normal. Of course, we don't know what's happening if we're going to have a baseball season. And it's amazing. Yeah, I've been doing this a long time, and this has certainly been a fascinating, although not necessarily enjoyable chapter. And in the business, it's been really tough. You mentioned some of the publications I've written for. Getting freelance work in the last couple of years has been almost impossible because everything has been done on Zoom. There's been no open locker room. It's anyone's guess when the next time a reporter will get to go in a locker room the way we used to do all the time. So just this week, I'm pitching stories and they're saying, well, we can just get the same interview at home, and thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah, it's interesting. I played that clip from Nick Peters, the Hall of Fame baseball writer from the, I think the Giants for most of his career. And this was a film that was done not long after he'd been inducted into the Hall of Fame. And I think he may have passed not long after that, but it was easily 10 plus years ago. And he was saying at that point, he goes, there's no way I could be a sports writer now. He said that you're on if you can get a gig, you're on TV more than you're writing. Newspapers have been dying for the last 25 years. He said, it's just a very different industry. And of course that was pre-pandemic with access virtually being cut off. What is happening, or what do you think will be the legacy, John, of the pandemic for sports writing and sports reporting and access to athletes? Because a lot of these athletes were no fans of media relations pre-pandemic, and it's almost like the pandemic isolation kind of gave them a pass. You know,
it's given them a pass, and they, you know, are going to say, well, we don't want to go back to that. It's going to be interesting because the people who lose out is the public. You don't get to know about the stuff about a player. I mean, there have been some stories and they're getting some feature work, but it's hard to get to know players. I mean, I've done this a long time. I used to be able to sit down before a game and talk to a Mike Schmidt or a Barkley or someone like that and just shoot, talk with them and not necessarily be in a mass interview with 20, reporters. And after 10 questions and the PR guy says, okay, that's enough. You could just talk to a guy, and that's just not happening anymore. I mean, Lou will know this with the Flyers, it was the same thing. You could, whether it was with Bobby Clark or someone like that, you could talk to the players after a locker room. One of my most memorable interviews was a Flyers Bruins game when Derek Sanderson came back to Philadelphia. And a lot of our listeners, I have no idea what I'm talking about, but that was the big story. Everybody was talking to Sanderson. I went to talk to a different Bruin, and for 10 minutes, I'm there by myself talking to Bobby Orr. And that kind of stuff just doesn't happen anymore, and it's unfortunate. And the public are the losers, not the player. The players, they've got their own forums, whether it's on Twitter or it's their own, the players' Tribune, the thing that Derek Jeter puts out. So they can have their forum, but it's hard for the public to really get to know the players and the, as people as much as anything.
Yeah, hey, John, it's Lou Scheinfeld. Good to see you. We should do this every 2 years. and in fact, in 2 weeks, we'll be beginning our fourth year of this radio show. So it'll be a good anniversary. And
I hope the music is a little closer than it was 2 years ago to getting done. I know that's certainly been a problem going before the pandemic, getting the funding and getting the museum, hopes getting it going for that. I hope they're getting it a little bit closer to that time.
Well, we have some traction with the museum. We have a developer who's really behind the museum, not too far. Now, he really loves it, and he's going to be involved in the $2 billion redo of Penn's Landing. So, and this is for real, the Penn's Landing, finally. The money is there, and the plans have already been approved. So we hope to be one of three museums there. There's already the Seaport Museum.
Right.
And the African-American Museum is going to move from 5th and Race, I think that's where they are, down to the Penn's Landing. And hopefully we'll be there to make it Museum Row. But I want to ask you about that. I told you, I'm so happy to see your byline in the Inquirer.
Oh, my.
A pleasant surprise, John.
It's been a lifelong goal of mine, I guess, to write for the Inquirer. I didn't expect it to, at this point, to come about. And it's unfortunate, some of the circumstances with people that I knew and worked with for years, them, having the buyouts and them, looking for other, forms of, for writers. And it's given me an opportunity, as well as some younger people, and which is great for like college interns to get a chance to get their name in the paper. But it's been nice, and I was really happy to do this story this past weekend on the 20th anniversary of the 2002 All-Star Game here.
That stunned me. I had to pause for a second when I saw your little promo posting on Facebook, and I looked for the article, and I went, it's not 20 years. Oh, it is 20 years. Oh, my God.
There's another side to that story, and your story was wonderful, brought back a lot of memories. But I recall there were some issues with that game, the parties. that took place in Center City that didn't start till 3 and 4 in the morning. Allen Iverson's party and several other big hitters.
My invitations got lost, so I didn't get to those parties.
I don't doubt that.
But Lou, as a memorabilia guy, if you notice my T-shirt here, that is the logo and the T-shirt from the 2002 All-Star game.
Oh, that's a nice, nice item.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'll ask you a little later about some of the stuff you purloined over the years, John, in your sports reporting. But
I remember it was so upsetting, all the stuff that went on in Center City with the parties getting out of hand and people charging big numbers and not showing up, stars I'm talking about. Ed Snyder at the time said he will never have an All-Star game again at the Wells Fargo or whatever building. Yeah, they were in the Wells Fargo Center
It was then the First Union Center. It was the First Union Center then, one of the four names they've had,
so it was pretty wild, but it's great for the city. Now, you know, in 2026 we've got the baseball All-Star game, NHL and NBA, God knows what else, and that's going to be sensational. Hopefully the world will be a different place at that time.
Yes, let's hope so.
But John, what do you see? I one of the things that when I read your article and I was looking at that, it made me think of a moment where we were doing a lot of, it was the day night before and there was all the activity. I think there was a lot of events going on at the convention center, as I recall. I ran into David Cohen, who I think at that point was Rendell still mayor at that point? I think he was. He wasn't governor at that point, was he?
No, he wasn't governor. He probably was mayor then.
Still mayor. And David Cohen was his chief of staff. And I got to know David just from, you know, coverings at City Hall. And he was there with his then young son. And I said, what do you love about the All-Star game? And he goes, what do you love coming to, you know, doing all the All-Star stuff? And the kid, it was a very moving moment. I almost felt badly about asking the question. He goes, well, now I finally get to see my dad. And I just sort of kind of gasped for air. And I looked up at David, and David goes, wow. He goes, I was not expecting that answer, but he said, that's going to cause me to rethink my family time. Because his little boy was saying, I never get to see my dad. He's always with the mayor. He's always, you know, in Harrisburg. He's always in Washington, D.C. But the All-Star, maybe it was the All-Star game of 2002 that moved David Cohen over to Comcast. And now he could control his schedule, potentially.
I traveled some, but not, and I have a 25-year-old daughter, and I wasn't too far away from her, so that was fortunate. She knew who her father was and that part of it. But I know there are players that you know, is definitely true, and people regret missing, you know, events and family things. And that's supposedly one of the reasons Tom Brady supposedly is retiring now, so he can spend more time with his children. You know, at least that's part of the answer they're giving.
Yeah, you hope it's true. You hope it's not that had he won or gone to the Super Bowl and won, if that would have been delayed another year. It's usually when they finally run out of gas and it's like, family. Yeah. I need to spend time with my family. Yeah.
But, well, John, getting back to the conversation with the locker room access for the media, I mean, isn't it your opinion that players, they have Twitter, they can tweet out their thoughts after a game, but don't you have the opinion that is, the media is kind of, in sports, the connect between the fans and the players? So
that's who I grew up in the business believing and seeing it. I always felt I can, you know, one of the good things in doing this story with this about getting to talk to a Jason Kidd or, you know, someone like that about and ask a couple of questions in a row instead of having, you know, and getting to, you know what they're thinking rather than just being in a mass interview. And we've missed that, and the public misses that. And there's no individuality in terms of my story from someone else's, because they're all the same quotes and they're all the same opinion. So you're not getting, you know, beside the fact that there aren't as many papers around and there's different, you know, companies are running more organizations. I was talking to somebody who says like the paper out in Bucks County is being run by people in Altoona, and so that they don't understand Philadelphia. And that's one of the things that wasn't true. I started working in Norristown, and I would, you know, cover high school games. And then in my spare time, I'd go to a Flyers game or a Sixers game or something like that. That's how I started out. Maybe that's not feasible anymore for somebody in the business, but it's, you know, I can't say I regret what I did. It's just right now, it's hard to see something, you know, what's happened to this business. Mm-hmm.
Where is it going to go, John? Obviously, the pandemic has created a whole new dynamic and lack of access. You know, you were talking about buyouts at the Inquirer and elsewhere. You know, you're not just on the sports writing side, but on the, you know, columnists and, you know, in dailies all around the country. Where do you see it going? Because Susan brought up an interesting point, you know, before the show, that if access is cut off to the players and the players have no interest in access anyway, it's just going to be scores and stats. It really is just going to be, you're going to be covering the game and that's all you're, then you're stuck with that.
It's definitely different. You know, I don't envy the next generation of writers because it's going to be different. I hope to be some of the old style coming back, but they're going to have to improvise. And a lot of people, you know, no newspapers anymore. We grew up every day having a paper delivered or, you know, getting at the store and reading it, you know, and there are people now who never see a newspaper and everything they get is on their phone or on an iPad. So there's companies like The Athletic and people, that's all they are is a website. They don't have a newspaper. So I don't know the answer. And as you know, one thing I did want to talk about is that I'm the president of the Philadelphia Sports Writers Association, which some people say, you know, what is that? It's, you know, like, but we've had over, you know, been around since 1904, and we've had to make adjustments, including the fact that our annual dinner we haven't had since January of 2020. We didn't have one last year. We're now looking at, we were supposed to have it this January, had to move it back. We were going to have it this past Monday, February 21st. Pushed it back again, and now we're scheduling it for May 2nd, and we're trying to, one, get not so much current players. The idea this year is to have a celebration of Philadelphia sports. We want to try and get as many of the Philadelphia greats to come in. I have so far, Mark Howe is one person who's on board. Doug Wow. Collins. Doug Collins says he'll do every effort to come, and we have a lot of others up in the air that I, you know, love to announce. I don't have them yet, but the idea being, if we could get some of the greats, that would be something. To be honest, we haven't had that much success of our teams in the last few years, so it's not like they're great. You know, the players now, there's some, you know, obviously like a Bryce Harper or, you know, Joel Embiid are great players, but their teams have to this point haven't had the success that some of those others have had.
And what you talk about the difficulty in sort of keeping that culture together, pandemic doesn't help. But do you think the sports writers dinner could serve as kind of a recruitment tool in some form or fashion?
I mean, I've talked to a lot of the newer writers at the Inquirer and places, and they say, yeah, I'd like to get involved. And I, you know, have to try and bring them in because, you know, we need a new generation. We have, you know, most of the members of on the board are older, or, you know, if it's going to continue, as I say, it's been 120 years almost. And, you know, if people go on our website, phillysportswriters.com, they will see the history. We used to have, you know, like Joe DiMaggio, the list of people who've attended over the years. When I started out, I remember once, you know, at one with Muhammad Ali, and, you know, people like that. We have a rich legacy, and even more recently we've had some great players, but it gets tougher. The access, as we're saying, is tougher. Players aren't as willing. They don't feel the need to be out in public as much unless there's something in it for them. So it's kind of become a vicious circle, and I hope it can change, but I can't say for sure it will.
It is a great event.
Yeah,
We hope it will be. And this, as I say, Monday, May 2nd, it's a scheduled Phillies off day. And I say scheduled because if they get a baseball season, it's possible they might plug that date. They did this week with the Flyers game, which was not scheduled on the 21st. They put that in afterwards. So the Phillies are supposed to be off that day, and we're hoping to get a lot of people out. I know in November I was at the Philadelphia Sports Hall of Fame induction. There were, and that was a great event. They had a big turnout. They had a, you know, a nice dais, and we're hoping there's something like that.
And maybe you can use it to drill down to regional colleges and high schools.
Well, I want to include the colleges. I want to include, besides the pros, I've talked to people at St. Joseph's and, you know, LaSalle, Villanova, Penn, yeah, and Temple, and hoping to get some of their greats there too. But
exactly. And use it as a recruiting tool for young, you know, aspiring sports writers or people who may be thinking about sports agency. You can divert them into the sports writing craft and single-handedly save the industry, John Marks.
Well, sports writer
John Marks, extraordinaire. Thank you so much for being on the Museum of Sports show.
All right, let's make it sooner than 2 years next time, though.
Exactly. Well, keep us posted about the dinner. We want to see that be the resurgence of young sports writers in America.
I'm glad there's no pressure on me.
Thanks, John. Come back.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Hey, when we come back, he is color analyst, Phillies guy in the booth extraordinaire and emeritus, Chris Wheeler, will be joining us here in just a second when the Museum of Sports show continues here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. We'll be right back.
It was 1967 and Philadelphia was in a rut. The economy, racial riots, and Vietnam. That is until the Broad Street Bullies rallied the region's spirits and brought more than 2 million people into the street to celebrate. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's candid memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, available on Amazon and at Barnes & Noble. You'll love the inside stories about Frank Sinatra, Ed Snyder, Bernie Parent, Frank Rizzo, Elvis Presley, the 76ers, Mick Jagger, Electric Factory Concerts, and Kate Smith. And you'll find out how Lou Scheinfeld helped Ed Snyder rescue the Flyers and, against all odds, got the Spectrum built. Blades, Bands, and Bowlers. Get a signed first edition copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. The book the Philadelphia Inquirer called a fascinating and hilarious read. Blades, Bands, and Bowlers. An ode to a building that truly rocked. Bam.
The Museum of Sports show is presented by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatche is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat heart disease, hypertension, palpitations, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Dr. Nicholas Depatche, MD, FACC, author of 4 books and over 100 articles and abstracts at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034. Children are our future, and communities must look out for their well-being. Mission Kids Child Advocacy Center strives to achieve healing and justice for victims of child abuse by providing collaborative services, advocacy, leadership, and education. Visit missionkidscac.org to learn how you can get involved. That's missionkidscac.org.
Who remembers the Philadelphia A's or the Warriors or the old arena at 46th and Market? We do, and that's why the Museum of Sports is being planned for Philadelphia. What's it like to face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, ride your bike up the Maniunk Wall, or drive in the Pocono 500? We've got rare items from Babe Ruth, Mike Schmidt, Chuck Bednar, Bernie Parent, and Wilt Chamberlain. Museum of Sports is on the air, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860.
The clock is ticking on the season potentially being delayed. The two sides have agreed to daily meetings all this week in the hopes that they can get a deal done. Opening day remains scheduled for March 31st.
We're back here on the Museum of Sports show on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. Museum of Sports show brought to you by the Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the experts in non-invasive treatment. I'm Doug Schiamel along with Lou Scheinfeld and Susan Baxter. We're waiting with great anticipation for the arrival of Wheels, who is figuring out his audio and his iPhone, so he may be calling in. But we wanted, normally this time of year, we'd be talking to him about spring training, which of course is well over 2 months delayed with the Major League Baseball lockout. It started back in early December, and it's still going on. And Lou, can you remember a time where you had a lockout that was sort of fouling up spring training because the games have been canceled, or at least through March 5th? There's still, I think, looking at a February 28th sort of drop deadline to determine if the season's going to have to slide.
Yeah, they said if it's not settled by Monday, they're going to have to start eliminating games, make it a shorter season. The players don't want to lose any money by playing fewer games, so they countered with, we'll play doubleheaders, seven-inning doubleheaders, man on second to begin with. So it's back to the pandemic stuff. I've seen enough stoppages to make me sick with baseball. It's the billionaires arguing with the millionaires. And today's article in the Inquirer about Ranger Suarez, wonderful player, and he only makes $575,000 for his 8 months.
These are tough times.
And they want him to make $750,000 a year. I would like to make 500 and some thousand a year and only work 9 months. Anybody, a school teacher, a firefighter, anybody.
Exactly.
$50,000 a year is a lot of money to somebody. This is 10 times that. And they are greedy. They're selfish. They don't care. They're killing the sport. Every time they walk out, they kill. And now is the worst time of all. After the pandemic and what's going on globally, the last thing we need is millionaires fighting with billionaires.
Exactly. And I know someone who's got very distinct opinions about that is the color analyst emeritus. He is joining us by phone from Clearwater. He was a Marple Newtown and Penn State boy who did good in sportscasting. He had stops in Chicago and CBS Radio in New York, and he was the color guy for Phillies baseball alongside the legendary Harry Callis for nearly 40 years. From Clearwater, Florida, on the phone, a big Museum of Sports show. Welcome back to the one, the only, Mr. Chris Wheels Wheeler. Hi, Chris.
Thank you. I appreciate that big buildup, but I'm obviously computer and phone illiterate because I tried everything.
We had such high hopes for you because you did so well the last time.
I know.
Against all odds.
I can't figure it out. I thank goodness I kept emailing you guys back and forth that, you know, we finally came up with a phone number. So next time, you know, hold my hand and we'll figure this out. But I keep saying I'm joining the Zoom meeting, but it won't join it. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris, it's Lou Scheinfeld. I think you don't want to be seen because you don't want us to see palm trees in 85 degrees of weather down there. Well, we just had snow flurries. Another miserable day up here.
Lou, I was going to do that. I had a nice background for you today because it is 81 here today. And I was going to show you the golf course and all that, but you don't need that. You're right.
So you probably got reconnected there with Lou was on his tirade because we were talking about, sort of the excitement of spring training. And now we're, 2 months plus in the lockout, and there's been some token agreements on peripheral issues. But, it's next Monday, as Lou is pointing out, is sort of the deadline to decide if they're going to start punting on, some of those regular season games. What's been your take on this whole thing?
Well, it was fun for me today because I went out to the ballpark. And, we have a minor league mini camp going on right now. So a lot of the top prospects were out there. And I got to see Joe Girardi and Dave Dombrowski and Larry Bowen and Charlie Manuel and some of the other guys like that, are kind of helping out with the whole thing. But it's tough because I've been through the eight labor stoppages, and we haven't anything since 95. And, to me, the primary thing is always going to be the quote-unquote salary cap, which baseball can never get. And I think that when I watch all this stuff or read all this stuff, and I know fans' eyes glaze over because it's like Lou said, they don't want to hear it. But the main issue to me still seems to be they're trying to get that number raised where the owners get taxed if they spend so much. And there's such a huge difference because they call that a quote-unquote salary cap. And Marvin Miller and Don Fear and now Dave Clark and whoever else is involved, that is the cap in baseball is a three-letter word that's an ultimate four-letter word to the union. So I think that's what it is. Well, I heard you talking about the minimum salary, and that's a great point when you think of that the money. But when you look at what the other leagues pay their players minimum salary, baseball still has a long way to go to catch up. So I can see them complaining about that a little bit. But I still think it's about that big number of where they want to get, that the owners do not get taxed if they spend so much. And, you know, they've read a lot about the Phillies over the last few years in that area.
And what is this, Wheels, what does this do to fandom? You know, sports has been kind of a quasi-savior during the pandemic. You know, things have sort of normalized in the last year plus, you know, with crowds being let back in the ballparks for the most part. But what do lockouts like this do to fan enthusiasm? Because baseball's been struggling in recent years and trying to figure out how to kind of reinvent the brand and sort of create its next generation. Because the demographic is graying out for them.
Well, it doesn't help any when you're not playing, or there's no news. I mean, because a lot of you know, what you say is true, and you know, it's obvious that stuff is true. But I think it's still there to be harvested if you do it the right way. I mean, they're letting them, you know, have the celebrations on the field the way that every other sport did for so long. You know, to do all that showbiz stuff. So that, you know, they've allowed that, you know, the old let the kids play thing that they did last year. So they're aware of what they have to do, but this stuff doesn't help. Right now, the media should be down here and on television at nights and in the papers and online and all the things that we do nowadays, tweeting and all that stuff, would be baseball and what's going on down here in Clearwater and other places. And what do you get? You get crickets. There's nothing happening. You know, so to me,
we need it, Chris.
I agree, Lou.
We look. Winters are horrible. They go on forever. And the one thing since we're kids is that spring training, pitchers and catchers report February 25th or whatever it might be. And all of a sudden, the world's rosy, and you see the players down there and the palm trees and it's just wonderful. And not only that, but there's a lot of people not working right now because there's no game. So all the people in the stadium and the catering and you name it. And there's a lot of ancillary hurt that goes on. So it's kind of a spiral.
I couldn't agree with you more. And believe me, when I was standing out there on those beautiful fields today, the green fields and the beautiful dirt, you know, they keep everything in such perfect shape. And this, you know, it's 80 degrees and there's not a cloud in the sky. And I'm thinking like you, Lou, this is really a darn shame that this has to happen. And the first time since 95 that we've had one of these darn things. And the last agreement, I think, was 2016. And the players thought that they got jobbed by the owner. So it was going to be a problem this time. Like I said, people don't really want to hear about the issues. They really don't. And you guys just brought that up. The people that love the game want it back. They want to be watched. They got snow flurries up there. They want to know that it's see some video tonight that how gorgeous it is down here. It's beautiful. You know,
I know what it does to the fans. It pisses them off.
I was going to give you a beautiful shot of this right now, but obviously, because of my technological failures, I can't do it, and I apologize.
Well, what's the local economy doing down there? Is it happy hours starting at 8 a.m. now just to get anybody in the door? I mean, what are they doing?
Well, the thing about down here right now, and, you know, I've been coming down here since 1972. Well, they're not having any to say that they won't miss spring training and exhibition games and the revenues and the players spending money and the fans and all that. It's jammed down here. Florida has exploded because so many people are moving from other states, and we don't need to get into all that stuff. But this state is just loaded with new people. There's plenty of tourists down here. The traffic is unbelievable, so they're not hurting. But when you bring up the ancillary people at the ballpark that would work and you know, be the security people or the vendors or the ushers and usher, you know, people doing that sort of stuff. Yeah, absolutely. You're taking money out of their pocket and it hurts them because there's a lot of retirees down here that like that as a second job. But trust me, the state of Florida right now is not hurting for people.
So are some of the players working out privately? Have you seen some of them?
Well, no, you know, I know Harper's down here because somebody took a shot of a a selfie with him on the beach the other day. So he's here. but are they going to batting? I don't know. There's no media down here covering them or anything. So are they going to batting cages on their own, or are they doing stuff on their own or playing catch? I don't know. It's just too quiet. As I said, it's crickets with this whole thing right now, and it's very, very very, very disturbing. And as somebody that lived through all the other ones and all the uncertainties and what it does to your game, nothing good comes out of this.
Yeah, you know, it's you bring up an interesting image there of Major League Baseball players trying to book time in the local batting cages and, elbowing aside the 8 and 9 year old little leaguers who obviously are ecstatic that these guys would be there. They're like, get out of here. We've got it booked for the day.
Well, like I said, they could be doing that or not. I don't know. I certainly don't want to get anything started that Chris Wheeler says there's a lot of players down here elbowing kids out of batting cages. Did you know how that starts?
I think right? It's a great storyline. Oh, it's a wonderful storyline.
Oh, those rotten players. What are they doing to those 8-year-olds? You know? So I have no idea about any of that.
Wheels, what's it going to take to sort of to get through this impasse and get an abbreviated spring training and a season going?
That's a great question. And I wish I had an answer for you. And anybody says they have an answer. I heard you pointing, I think it was Lewis saying it, that the deadline, the thing for the drop dead start to start the season, quote unquote, on time is Monday. So is something going to happen between now and Monday? They are evidently, we're in Clearwater, which is on the West Coast, and Jupiter's on the East Coast. They're meeting over there. That's where these meetings are going every day. But every time you read about them, nothing gets done. I mean, all it is, they're firing shots at each other. That's not a good analogy with what's going on in Ukraine right now, is it? Yeah. I just thought of that. I wasn't too smart. But anyway, they're just kind of throwing things out there, but none of the major issues, at least publicly, that we know about are discussed or there's any movement on them that they can report after each meeting. Maybe they are. Maybe we can be optimistic and they are having some movement on these major issues that are holding everything up. But right now, nothing to the public would give you any thought or any optimism on that.
Yeah, exactly. So, Wheels, I can't remember if I asked you this the last time, but I usually ask everybody, since we are the Museum of Sports show, what sort of memorabilia have you kind of shall we say collected, purloined, stolen over the years in the booth or in the locker room?
I really really fell by the wayside on that, but I do have some. I looked in my, before I came down to Clearwater in January, in my office back in Bluebell, I do have stuff signed by my baseball by Mike Schmidt and Steve Carlton and Pete Rose and Hank Aaron, which is faded now. You can't read it anymore, but I know it was Hank Aaron on there originally. So I do have some stuff, but I never was into getting jerseys signed or bats signed or collecting in that. I just never want to go around and ask guys for that, but I have enough little things that I'm happy to have. When I have a Pete Rose and a Mike Schmidt and a Steve Carlton signed baseball, which I can still read, I'm happy about that. But I don't have a lot. I couldn't help lose museum much.
Well, I have my Sheinfeld Phillies shirt right behind me, which was given to me by the immortal Eddie Wade. Eddie Wade?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yes. At a ceremony, and I think you actually spoke that day. It was in the.
I think I
but
did.
But anyway, I treasure it. I signed it myself, and I look at it every day. But nobody wants an NFT of it. I don't understand.
Well, I just want you to know that I did have video of you guys before we finally had to go this route, and I saw the jersey there, Lou. So it looks great.
Well, since the show's over, I put the Sixers jersey back.
Well, you have a little bit of history there.
Yeah. Lou likes to remember his playing days, so that's why he'll put up his game-worn jersey up there, Wheels.
Hey, I hope your book's doing well. Congratulations.
Thank you, Chris. It's been so much fun. I didn't know if I'd sell 10 copies or none. And it looks like our first printing is going to sell out. So I'm very excited about that. And I've gotten some wonderful comments from people I don't know who have bought the book on Amazon or wherever and reach out to me somehow on Facebook, or they, one guy called my home and just want to tell me how much he loved it and brought back memories from when he was 16 years old. And he ran on the ice at the, when they beat the Bruins to win the cup, and he shook hands with Ed Snyder. And just great stories. So I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, I know when I did, you know, I did mine back in 2009, and then they had a second printing or whatever it is, and we put more information or more stuff in it. And the point you just made, Lou, is one of the greatest things, is that people write to you. Back in those days, you had to write a letter sometimes, you know, instead of.
Right.
And, but when you, and one of the greatest things that ever happened to me was I was in a Barnes and Noble, and a guy was buying my book. And he happened to see me there, and doesn't he call, ask me if I would talk to his dad, who was a lifelong Phillies fan, and he calls his father, and I'll tell you, it just gave you one of those feelings of, you know, that's why we do this stuff. You're doing it for other people. You're not doing it for yourself. You're doing it for other people. And that was one of the greatest, and for people to come up and say, oh, I read your book, and it gave me so many great memories. I remember back when we did this and that, 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 that. And it's just what you're saying right there. And to me, that is the best thing. If you make a couple bucks on it, terrific. But if, just the memories.
It's not about the money.
Reaction, no way it's about the money. And that was my greatest feelings, and it sounds like it. The same thing is happening with you, Mo.
Yeah, well, now I've written a couple of romantic novels since then, but nobody wants it. My family won't even read it.
I don't think anybody would care about my love life at Marple Newtown High School either, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we'll save that for the steamy romantic novel episode on the next.
It wasn't too steamy in the early 60s, trust me.
Just some general lightheadedness.
really?
Hey, Phillies sports booth analyst emeritus. You've been called so many things in your day, and all of them wonderful. Chris Wheels Wheeler, we cannot thank you enough for joining us. We'll take you by the phone. We always like to see you and see the palm trees. But thanks for coming on the Museum of Sports Show.
Well, thanks. And next time we have to have a conversation on what I have to do right to make that work. And I apologize. And it's always great talking to you guys. And, you know, Lou and I go back forever. And it's nice to be a part of your show anytime.
Thank you so much, Wheels. Enjoy yourself, okay. And hopefully we'll have some good news come next Monday about the
I hope so. I hope the next time we're talking, it's not about this nonsense.
Exactly. All right. Take care. Okay. Be safe.
Okay. Everybody, same thing here. Bye.
Thanks, Wheels.
Take care.
Hey, when we come back here on the our King of Sports Collectibles, Nick DiPaccio Jr., with the world's largest and most valuable sports memorabilia collection, that coming on the Museum of Sports Show. And we come back from the break here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live, back in a couple of minutes.
Can you imagine Philadelphia without the Broad Street Bullies or its fabled Spectrum Arena? Well, that almost happened until Lou Scheinfeld and Ed Snyder, otherwise known as Flash and Cash, teamed up to rescue the Flyers and got America's Showplace up and running. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's heartfelt memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. Blades, Bands, and Ballers.
The Museum of Sports Show is presented by DiPaccio Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas DiPaccio is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat shortness of breath, brain fog, chronic disease, autonomic dysfunction syndrome, and more with minimum medicine. To learn more, please call Nicholas DiPaccio, MD, FACC, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Who remembers the Philadelphia A's or the Warriors or the old arena at 46th and Market? We do, and that's why the Museum of Sports is being planned for Philadelphia. What's it like to face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, ride your bike up the Maniunk Wall, or drive in the Pocono 500? We've got rare items from Babe Ruth, Mike Schmidt, Chuck Bednarik, Bernie Perron, and Wilt Chamberlain. The Museum of Sports is on the air, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860.
Hey, buddy, what can I get you? How about the ultimate sports memorabilia basement?
Welcome back to the Museum of Sports Show on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. The Museum of Sports Show brought to you by the DiPaccio Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the experts in non-invasive treatment Up next are King of Sports Collectibles. You see him there in the Zoom box, whose family has the world's largest and most valuable sports memorabilia collection, conservatively estimated at 35 quintillion NFT Bitcoin. Which I just
blockchain,
made up.
Blockchain.
Blockchain. I have no idea. And he is our wonderful partner in the Museum of Sports, Nick DePaccia Jr. back with us. Hi, Nick.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
Yeah, that was my made up valuation there. Hey, we just had Chris Wheeler on talking about the lockout. And of course, the thing that pops into my head is like, well, I remember when the pandemic first started and there was going to be a March Madness and then it wasn't. And we're talking to Ryan Fannin, the play-by-play guy for Villanova, and he had all of his credentials and his score sheets and things like that for an event that never took place. What could a lockout, a Major League Baseball lockout, create in terms of collectibles? I'm always trying to look for an upside in a downside story, Nick.
Yeah, well, with the pandemic, it was different. The pandemic, there was collectability, but the fans understood why the season had to be shortened, even though it did go back and forth and it was shortened more than it should have been. But if this ends up being shortened because of a lockout, I think it has such a negative connotation because these fans don't like to see billionaire owners fighting with millionaire players. And I think it's just a big turnoff, and it's not the same as the pandemic where like the canceled All-Star game, it was a novelty. If you canceled the game or the World Series because of this lockout, it's something that's rare, but not in a good way. And it doesn't have that novelty aspect that the pandemic did. There is precedent with the 1994 World Series. There's merchandise like 1994 World Series official baseballs out there, and but they really held great value over the years. It's a collectible, but it's not. It's nothing that's gonna be too valuable.
Yeah, I wondered about that. We were talking about just the impact of lockouts and great perceived greed on fandom, particularly in a league that's struggling now. With attendance, a graying of the demographic, and trying to reinvent themselves and make themselves relevant to the next generations, and I'm guessing you could try to peddle some of that lockout memorabilia if spring training doesn't come to pass, or if they start canceling or rescheduling early regular season games. Is there a market out there for that sort of thing? Even though, as you say, lockouts result in a lot of pissed off fans and a lot of pissed off collectors.
I'm sure you could find a market if you look hard enough, but I don't think worth it. If you're trying to sell some of this stuff, it might be too much effort for what you might get back for it.
Yeah. Good Lord.
Yeah. But you brought up a great point that baseball these days, they've struggled to adapt to traffic. It's now baseball's my favorite sport just to follow in general. I love every other sport, particularly the NFL and NBA, but there's something about baseball that to follow the statistics and everything. I mean, that's been my passion. And it's been bothering me a lot recently that it's just they've fallen so far behind. And like I said, I love going to the other sporting events. We have season tickets to the Eagles and Sixers. But I wish people would just come around and try to adapt. And I talk about this with one of our museum's board members all the time. His name is George Summers. Luke met him before. And he's a huge baseball fan, and he said that what he thinks is they need to bring in someone from the outside. They need to bring in an outsider to kind of breathe new life into the marketing of it and everything.
Huh. And what would and here again, because I always want to try to relate it to memorabilia and that sort of thing. If Major League Baseball would make that acknowledgement, which who knows, maybe after this lockout and go round if it's big enough of an economic dent and, you know, polling or fan attitudes say, all right, we've had it. I'm canceling my season tickets. Is there collectability in the reinvention of baseball? Does that make sense?
Yes. And it does. It relates directly to memorabilia. I mean, they go hand in hand, the popularity and collectability. Baseball is still the king of collectibles. Baseball is still the Babe Ruth is the number one player of any sport for collecting. And Babe Ruth hasn't played a game since the 1930s. So that's saying something. It's been almost 100 years since you've seen him on a baseball field. And even since he's been alive, it's been like almost 80, 90 years or however to estimate. And he's still the number one most collectible athlete in all of sports. So that says something. But if change in terms of adapting to the newer generations, that the NFL and NBA are making pretty good strides. You see these cards, these rookie cards from Patrick Mahomes and LeBron James. In the millions, and it's those guys could pass a Honus Wagner with people growing up in the 2020s. So we got to see. Baseball does need to be more relevant to the younger population if you want the memorabilia to stay relevant. I still think a Babe Ruth or a Ty Cobb will hold its value, but I mean, like a Ducky Medwick, like great players in the 20s, 30s, 40s, like Lloyd and Paul Wehner, those types of guys. I don't see how they will hold value unless like kids are getting into the game, and by getting into the game, they might be studying the history of the game. Yeah. And hopefully that's what our museum strives to do, is keep these kind of players alive.
Hey, Nick, what's on your radar to try to collect right now? Yeah, you got anything lined up?
So we've been buying like a little bit here and there. We have our eye out for a James Harden game used jersey when the time comes, but we might want to wait off because I think right away it's going to be that they might inflate the price a little bit. So it's probably better off that we hold off for that. Plus maybe it doesn't pan out, but I have a good feeling about it. So Sixers are on our radar, definitely. And
Fanatics says it's Harden's jersey is the number one selling jersey in all of sports.
Oh yeah. I mean, for fans to wear, but and that's not going to be too overpriced because it's going to, They don't charge more per player, I don't think, when it comes to the jerseys the fans wear. But when it comes to collecting game used jerseys, they'll put a higher price, obviously, on more stuff after.
Nick, you talk about like wanting to hold off on certain things in the market, and me being a recovering news guy, of course, I was watching the continuing coverage about the invasion of Ukraine today, and they're talking about all the ripple effects from home heating prices to food to what have you. What impact do significant international events like that have on the market, or the willingness of collectors to spend that sort of money, or the willingness to put stuff on the market if they think, are we going to be in shelter in place mode?
Well, yeah, we've seen with like 2001, when September 11th happened and the market crashed shortly thereafter, there was a lull in collecting. But then we saw during the pandemic that it shot up, like their collectors were more active than ever. I think the difference was with September 11th, the market crashed and people were panicking. People were panicking during the pandemic, but the difference is people got bored during the pandemic, staying at home during lockdowns. So what else was there to do for some people than, let's go on the internet and see what's out there. Like there was someone, a collector, that he he hadn't collected cards probably for 20, 30 years. And he just felt, he literally felt bored. So he started going on. And this collector, he's like gotten into cards more than ever now. And he's actually made some serious cash off flipping some of them. So, you know, it's hard to predict, but I think that this would probably prevent people from buying this particular situation, because people are going to want to put more in their wallets to fill up at the pump for, I don't know, it was $70 last time I filled up my car. I'm scared to find out what it is this time.
Yeah, I can see that being the case. That was sort of my gut, that, you know, if you've got money, you know, tied up around the country, around the world, and you're debating whether to pick up some, you know, higher end collectibles, and all of a sudden you're starting to think, ooh, you know, what impact is this, you know, is cyber warfare going to have on my ability to access my funds? And am I going to need that for basic survival as opposed to buying a piece of memorabilia, that sort of thing?
Oh, yeah, yes, no, exactly. So I think you're better off like just taking a step back. If you're a collector, take a step back. Even if you're a seller, this isn't the best time to sell. So I think that there's going to be a little lull in it, but it's going to come. I have no doubt it's going to come back. And we'll see when, like you said, when baseball ramps up again, I think we'll see a nice spike in that.
Morale boost, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And you have the NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs coming up. I mean, excitement ramps up. You have, if it's anything like the NFL playoffs this past year, I mean, that really generated a lot of it, especially with casual fans that were just like, these are the best playoffs ever. And they weren't wrong. So,
and who could forget the USFL, the reconstituted USFL? Everybody's excited for that, aren't they?
Oh, boy.
Over here. So I've already had a friend of ours who loves collecting hats, and he's listening right now. He already brought up the hats to collect for the USFL.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, we are out of time, guys. Our king of sports collectibles, Nick DePaccia Jr., thanks as always for being on the Museum of Sports show. We'll see you next week. That is our time for this week's show. We want to thank our guests, baseball color guy emeritus Chris Wheeler, sports writer John Marks, and our king of collectibles, Nick DePaccia Jr. And don't forget to buy Lou Scheinfeld's new book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created America's Greatest Showplace. You can buy a custom autographed copy by going to the Museum of Sports. .org. Portion of the proceeds goes towards the museum. It's available everywhere fine literature is sold. Museum of Sports show brought to you by DePaccia Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the experts in non-invasive treatment. For Lou Scheinfeld, Susan Baxter, Nick DePaccia Jr., I'm Doug Scheimel, reminding you of what our good friend Carly Simon always says. Lewis?
These are the good old days.
Oh, yes, they are. See you next week.
These are the good old days.